As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. I personally use it to guarantee that I'll always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you want to check out a Bitbox O2, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. All one word, no spaces. Check them out. Ah, screw it. Here we go.
Every 2016 blocks, the difficulty adjustment occurs. It's retargeted to compensate for the average of those 2016 blocks, like roughly 2 weeks. It has to basically account for the average of all the blocks over that period of time and then, you know, divide it by 2016. And if we're faster than 10 minutes, then the difficulty has to go up. And if we're slower than 10 minutes, then the difficulty has to go down. And it's really like bumpers in the bowling alley, like just kind of moving where the bumper is in a way. And this random deterministic process continues with basically like a new degree of friction, either less or more than was there before. And that's astounding to me.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
I think this is our 104th episode. I don't know, but I like to count now. Anyway, tonight we have on a guest that personally I love having you on, just because, you know, I find that there's so many new things that I learned from talking to TC here. That's who we're talking to tonight. So how you doing, TC?
Doing great. Happy Tuesday.
Oh yeah, and this is the third, I think TC is the first third time guest on the show. I could be wrong. It might have been the guys from Rock Paper Bitcoin. But I don't know if their episodes count as like full episodes. So TC is the first time coming on for the third time for a full episode. And TC of course stands for time chain calendar. He's the shaman of time. And he's back with us again. When was the last time we talked? It was sometime last year. How you been since then?
Yeah, I mean, half a year or more. I've been good. I've been busy. And life is just continuing to, you know, throw challenges. It's a time of growth. I think I was telling you guys right before we started this, really getting into summer, and that's a time of growth. I like it.
A time of growth, a time of challenge. What, anything specific that's interesting that you've been dealing with or you've been overcoming the past few months?
Yeah. How you been growing?
man, everything's growing. Family is growing. Garden is growing. Just continuing to, evolve the time chain calendar project, and just really living each day in the moment.
So I'm looking at the time chain calendar right now, and one thing I've noticed, so you just had a new version come out recently, right? Like, when was that?
Yeah, just about a week ago. I released 0.5, and I've already made a few updates and actually a few additions to 0.5. At this point, I think 0.5.5 is the latest. And you'll see that version number in the bottom right corner. So if you're not up to date, you should just do a hard refresh and you should get the latest version.
So I'm looking at this thing right now, and the one thing I notice is it is... it's so much bigger. It's like so much more prominently focused on desktop, and I'm checking it out on mobile, but it looks so fucking clean and it's so much faster. And it seems like there's a lot more. What are the new features that you've done other than just like improve the whole user experience?
Yeah, I'd say that there's some significant new UI that's part of the whole interface, but there's also been a real sort of rearranging of furniture kind of thing. Excuse me. Moved a lot of data that was inside the Circles interface out into a sidebar on desktop. You'll see it on the right side. And on mobile, you'll see all that stuff below the main Circles when you scroll. And to me, there's a kind of an effort to try to focus the UI further and also organize all that extra data more. And so that's a really big deal to me, because that's kind of at the heart of what the whole pension calendar is about. It's trying to make you able to see what you need to see.
What, if any, what any changes, anything you've noticed different about the data or the block times or anything like that since the halving? Like, it's been a few months now. I'm just wondering if there's been any changes or, you know, pattern changes. It seems like the difficulty still seems on it seems incredibly high. I think miners are probably struggling, but what are you seeing, like, just from the time chain calendar perspective?
Oh, since, just where we are?
Yeah, just where we're at since the halving. Like, anything that's changed. Like,
yeah.
On-chain behavior changing, et cetera. Runes have come out, you know, like all these more ordinal shit coins, but...
Man, I think runes failed. It's 7 sats per V-byte or something to get
that's
into
rough.
A block right now. I don't think all of that sort of excitement was very lasting. It's kind of what you would expect. These kind of hype cycles take their course. But at this point, fees have come back down. Demand for block space is not keeping the fees high. However, there's a ton of unconfirmed transactions still to chew through. And you never know. As these fees come down low, there's always seems to be another kind of bad that emerges that causes people to rush in, because it's cheap right now to do all that kind of silliness.
I'm curious what you think about these low fees a little bit more specifically, because I see a lot of angst and a lot of, I don't know, just this, it almost seems like fake hype or pressure to have to scale Bitcoin layer one, to have to adopt covenants or soft forks. And I'm not really even against any of those. I'm pretty intrigued by, like, the vaults that you can make if covenants were to be activated. But it does kind of seem like it's putting the cart before the horse, because there's this narrative that we have to be able to scale layer one so more people, you know, the masses can use it. They can use it sovereignly. They can have on-chain transactions, et cetera. But you just said, like, you know, and I'm looking at it now, the priority sats per V-byte rate is 8 sats per V-byte. So it's anybody can use layer one right now. It's not really a problem of necessity. We're still not able to kind of solve the problem or crack the code of incentivizing or encouraging or, you know, getting people to actually use Bitcoin, you know, self-custodially, sovereignly, whatever you want to call it, you know, at least not enough to affect fees.
Yeah, man. Wow. There's a shitload going on. It's a very dynamic landscape. Contrary to what a lot of people think outside of Bitcoin, that there's not much going on here. There's so much going on that it's also the dynamic of people who don't want to see any change versus
right.
People who are trying to do a whole variety of different things. So, you know, I could go down that rabbit hole, but you know, I honestly, for me, this is one reason I work on this time chain calendar project, because it keeps me focused sometimes on what I actually know for sure, which is, you know, the data that the chain is providing for us is it's a real signal, and I'm trying to kind of like capture that and expose it to you, you know, at its heart. So that's kind of been my focus right now. That's one of the reasons since the halving, I changed a lot of things. I actually had, whether you know it or not, my app crashed for a lot of people right on the halving, because I had a special video that we had produced. I collaborated with Real Richard and Anatomy of Bitcoin on some incredible music and visuals, and we made a beautiful little video that was going to play on the halving, and we DDoSed my server, everybody, thank you, and crashed it. So after that experience, I wanted to kind of improve the performance of the app, and also make these important changes to the UI to kind of like take it to the next level. Yeah.
So I'm looking at this thing, and you were talking about growth earlier, and I'm wondering, I want to know how you found this, how sort of brand look, because now you have, you know, Sessions wearing your t-shirts out there on stage, and it has this, you know, yellow circle and this red circle and this number, and it's like, we all know what it is. I'm curious how you found that.
I mean, it's a great feeling.
And it keeps changing too.
But I'm also like aware that this is how things get communicated. You know, I don't consider myself a designer, but I design Time Chain Calendar, and I think from a very visual perspective in terms of how everything should be presented and communicated, and, you know, t-shirts no different, right? My logo,
right,
trying to, you know, capture at least a bite of that.
Yeah, you want to be like, you want to stand out, you want to be recognizable, and it's,
yeah, yeah,
it's so simple, you, yeah, know, that's all I'm saying, is like, it's such a
check
simple
this out though. Okay,
concept.
we got to start getting,
but it really
stonier
works
here. So the t-shirt logo is the number 21, and then it's got a red circle and an orange circle around it, and that's the logo originally, and then I added the, you know, the lettering later, but you know, that's where Time Chain Calendar started. And when I first launched the app a year and a half ago, that's all that was there, was the block height in the middle, and then you had the red 2-week cycle to the difficulty adjustment, and the orange roughly 4-year cycle to the halvings. And that's the basis of the UI. And then in the version that I launched maybe shortly after I last talked to you, or maybe right before. Maybe it was right before the last time I came and visited you boys. There's the inner circle of the 24 hours of blocks. We've got all these little squares around the ring that got added,
yeah,
to it.
And
so that's
that, yeah,
the last 24 hours of blocks. Now there's two more circles. On desktop, you see this little timer on the inside, and it's basically 10 minutes. And that's tracking to the second how long it's been since the last block. And every time it loops around 10 minutes, it starts changing colors. And so there's a color scheme that indicates basically how many loops we've been around. So it's communicating the amount of time since the block in a visual way. I actually have plans to enhance that even more, to kind of like maybe instill a little anxiety if it's been more than an hour since a block, you know. And then anyway, so 10-minute timer got added in the middle. And then on the very outside of the interface, there's a dark orange circle. It's really thin. And that's the percentage supply issuance since Genesis.
Oh, wow.
So you can see we're not quite complete there. The little notches on that circle are the halvings. Now, grab the little slider at the bottom of the interface and slide it to the left, and you'll see the halving circle start to rotate back, but you also see the supply winding back. And now you'll see the relationship of the supply issuance relative to the halving cycles. It's a really, I think it's a really cool visual tool, an interactive way to think about these two concepts or these two metrics. And so now the whole interface has this, it's actually five layers of time. It's got the whole, it's got, let's go start from the inside. It's got a 10 minute block cycle, and then it's got a 24 hour rolling window of blocks, and then it's got a 2 week difficulty adjustment in red, and then it's got the 4 year halving adjustment in orange, and then that circle on the outside is the entire lifetime of Bitcoin. And if you know, it'll take 100 years or so to complete that circle, so we probably may not be around to see the end of that. So that's kind of wild. I'm showing five levels of time frames in that one interface that kind of, to me, it expresses the calendar nature of this. It's not a clock, it's a calendar, because it's
a clock
the,
and
I
a calendar.
I think I talked to you guys
time.
About this before. Yeah,
probably.
It's like these nested time frames. Like, but you got like days of the week, and then you've got weeks in a month, and then you've got months in a year. There's like nested time frames in a calendar, and I feel like there's a similar kind of thing happening in Bitcoin, because we have these cycles. This difficulty adjustment cycle is very real and very powerful and very important, and that's happening every 2 weeks. And usually it's only miners paying attention to that, but that's going on the inside of this longer epoch cycle, the orange circle. That's like every 4 years. It's this really long amount of time for most humans. Like, you might forget where your head was at the beginning of the 4 years, 4 years later, right? Like,
right.
These time frames make a difference. So now, like, this visualization is communicating the 10-minute expectation loop of the next block. And we all know the next block can come at any time. It's deterministic. It could come in the blink of an eye. It can take 2 hours or more to arrive. It's random, right? But we expect 10 minutes because the protocol targets 10 minutes. The protocol targets 10 minutes. The protocol doesn't enforce any block time. So to me, that's like the important thing here. This is like the heartbeat of Bitcoin. And as long as TikTok, next block, and all that stuff, like, Bitcoin is rocking. And so here's the block that we're on. And that's how many transactions went through. There's the reward. Check this out. The UI for the reward right above the block height. That's new too. I show you the subsidy there plus the fees equals the total reward. And it's a very nice way for maybe people even early or at the beginning of their journey with Bitcoin to like look at and understand this is how these block rewards come. There's that subsidy part. Now, if you slide the slider and roll backwards in the time chain, you'll see the subsidy increase. And so it's just kind of another useful way to kind of like internalize that stuff visually.
You've added these new rings or these new layers, and then you've mentioned, you use the term like layers of time, and it makes me think of like, that's a common analogy or a common meme, so to speak. Like, you see throughout nature, like, we measure the age of something, or we tell time based like the sediment layer when like archaeologists are doing a dig, or you look at a tree and it's got the rings around it, and you can count the rings to see how old the tree is. So I'm wondering, like, how many more rings can you add to this thing? And then at what point, how long do these rings have to be a part of the, you know, the experience or the visual of this app before they make it on the next iteration of t-shirt? Like, is there like a white line with the blocks on the inside of the next iteration of t-shirt at some point?
Yeah, man. I mean, you're hitting on it. I mean, this update brought two new circles. There were three before, and now there's five. I don't know if I can add any more. I've kind of also gone to the smallest cycle that's worth visualizing here, which is the 10-minute expectation of the next block. Like, that is essentially like what I'm trying to portray as the sort of fine grain, right? That's the zoomed in. And then you zoom all the way out to the outer circle. That's the entire lifetime of Bitcoin. And remember that that thing's at like the 11 o'clock position right now. We have like 93 point something percent of the supply issued. It's not going to reach 100% in our lifetimes. So that's that cycle on the outside is like the ultimate cycle zoomed out, right? So zoomed in all the way to like the 10-minute expectation of the next block, zoomed out all the way to the issuance of Bitcoin, which we will never live long enough to see the completion of, right?
Right.
Well, I would imagine you there's just undiscovered circles. That's what I think. It's like you can continue infinitely scale that as both ways. You know what I mean?
I was going to kind of make a similar observation, I guess, but the most important, you know, I don't know how to communicate this necessarily, but like things happen only in the blocks, right? Each block is when the transactions are recorded, you know, and each subsequent block builds on that. But there is, and you know, as you say, the protocol targets 10 minutes between blocks. And it's just kind of like almost like this empty space in time, or like this, it's like almost like in physics, like you talk about dark energy, like that's half, you know, that makes up the mass of the universe. So there's what's going on, or what's the importance, or what do these spaces tell us? Because even though the protocol targets 10 minutes, could we get to the point where we're so efficient with our time between blocks that we could go days, weeks, months, years between blocks and it would be fine? Like, we only need to record these transactions every so often. Is 10 minutes the magic answer, or do we find out at some point that we can go longer? I don't know.
I so want to answer this question. But go. TCL.
No. Well, go.
Well, I think it's converting small amounts of units of time that we experience in to longer units of time. So we start to experience things. What I think Bitcoin is kind of doing, in a way, is we're starting to experience things slower.
We're really high, or we're on mushrooms, and we think that it's been
exactly
4 hours and it's been 10 minutes.
But it's kind of true. If you are adhering to the sort of ethos of Bitcoin and you're trying to do all you can to preserve it, and you're trying to live that Bitcoin life, like, it's likely that your time frame has changed and does feel slower in a way. You are able to sit back and smell the roses in a lot of ways, and that affects your perception of time.
What if the answer to keeping Bitcoin decentralized and keeping people to be able to run nodes is slowing down the block time, just not by changing the protocol, just by adjusting, you know, the hash rate? Like, I don't know how the incentives would work, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so I think to even be able to think about this question, because it's like a really tricky, deep one. But to think about it, you have to go back to like the understanding of what is the block time.
Sure.
And like, what is this targeting? What does that really mean? And what happens because of it? And the truth is, it's completely indirect. The truth is, every single block is completely random to the one before it. There's total, like, randomness there. It's deterministic is what it's called. We don't know who is going to mine the next block or when they're going to mine the next block. And we better not know who's going to win the next block and when. Because if we knew those things, something's totally fishy. Like, what's keeping the system working incentive wise is that very powerful thing that we have, randomness. Now, that randomness results in a wide variety of times between one block to the next. But every 2016 blocks, the difficulty adjustment occurs, and the difficulty is retargeted. It's retargeted to compensate for the average of those 2016 blocks, like roughly 2 weeks. It has to basically account for the average of all the blocks over that period of time, and then divide it by 2016. And if we're faster than 10 minutes, then the difficulty has to go up. And if we're slower than 10 minutes, then the difficulty has to go down. And it's really like bumpers in the bowling alley, like just kind of moving where the bumper is in a way. And this random deterministic process continues with basically like a new degree of friction, either less or more than was there before. And that's astounding to me. There's another data point this raises that's on Time Chain Calendar, which is in that sidebar area at the bottom on the right. There's a little box that says Time Chain, and it shows an average block time. And that is the average block time for the entire chain since Genesis. So if we take every block and we check the timestamp of Genesis block and we look at the timestamp right now and average it out by the number of blocks, that's what we have. It's 9 minutes and 34 seconds, I believe. That's the time chain average block time, which is pretty interesting to look at. There was a time when the average block time was 15 minutes, and there was a time when it was 7 minutes, and now it's pretty damn close to 10 minutes, considering we're over 15 years later, and it's totally fucking random, one block to the next. And like, look at how many people are competing over blocks over time. That's the astounding thing, is that the difficulty has moved so drastically, and it's still so close to 10 minutes.
Do you think, and maybe there's research on this, I don't know, but do you have a theory on like, if you were to measure or try to look at the health of the network overall, do you think it's more healthy when the average block time is above 10 minutes or below 10 minutes or like a certain, within a certain, range? Is there,
I think if you're optimistic, you want things to be faster than 10 minutes and basically the difficulty continuing to go up. I think that's the natural incentives when things are healthy. However, everything's cyclical, and the halving cycles do mean something, and we haven't seen really the sort of aftermath of this recent halving as far as miners. And maybe between now and the end of the year we see that. I think the difficulty's gone down the last two times because we have been slower than 10-minute blocks. And maybe that's a sign of some people peeling off right now their hash rate because people are far less profitable or not profitable at all now after this halving. So look at the rewards again. That's why I put that right in the center of the interface. Every block, you see that little formula. Who mined the block, who gets that reward. That contains the subsidy. That is issuance supply. The fees was already circulated, UTXOs, but like the subsidy is what is new supply getting issued. So it's all so connected, and it's also important. Every block confirms transactions, but it also issues the next chunk of new Bitcoin, and that's what I'm focused on.
Maybe that's an interesting metaphor for life, that you're most healthy, or you're the strongest when your difficulty is going up and your ability to handle that difficulty and solve problems, time that's taking you is going down.
Yes.
I want to hop in here. Just because you made me think, like, I'm curious, like, how is the app being used these days as opposed to, like, how it was being used?
Yeah, what feedback are you getting to help you, like, improve the experience in the app overall based on how it's being used?
Man, I want to thank all the people out there who have, like, messaged me or tagged me in posts where they're showing me what's going wrong. I've had people like upset because something wasn't working, and I'm grateful for that because I try to just resolve and fix these things as fast as possible. Sometimes it's just, Well, yeah, I'm just gonna say it. It's just a really beautiful thing, actually, to sort of see that people care, right? Like I know I have more people visiting the website now than a year ago. It's only been around for a year and a half, and it's being, you know, visited from people all over the world too. One thing that's been a really big success is like putting all these translated languages on there where you can switch the language. And, you know, I try to make it sort of shareable so that when you switch the language, the URL changes and reflects that. So you could actually copy /RU and send someone and they'll get it in Russian, or, you know, /ES and they'll get it in Spanish. I've got 14 languages on there. So that's something else. I like got help from plebs to help me translate those things correctly in all those languages. And yeah, it's actually like really being appreciated in German and a couple other countries where there's just, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners who don't speak English. And I find that to be like really also a motivation of mine. Like, I really want this platform to be, you know, just as universal as possible. And I want it to be available to as many people as possible. So that just kind of makes me optimistic and hopeful. I like it.
One of to go back to something we were talking about, which is the design of the shirt and then the design of the app. So you can, when you look at that shirt, I think, you know, if you have really no exposure to Bitcoin, you're not going to recognize it as a Bitcoin shirt. But I think if you have much exposure to it, I think between the 21, you know, is maybe enough to kind of give it away. But my point is, there's no Bitcoin logo and it doesn't say Bitcoin on the shirt anywhere. And then when you go to the website, at least by default, unless you change the settings, the word Bitcoin doesn't exist on, you know, the home of the app. And I think BTC, the three letters BTC are only show up if you add that setting from the settings menu. So
yeah, it says under the exchange rates, the top exchange rate is USD/BTC, like as in how many dollars for one Bitcoin. Yeah. And then the you know, the other ones use sats. There's plenty of mentions of Bitcoin in the good morning messages that pop up, and also in the calendar alerts when there's special days, and also in the info section in the terminology section. I've got a lot of different definitions, and I refer to it there. And in social media posts, I talk about Bitcoin directly, but yeah, no, I think what you're picking up on is that like I'm just trying to present things in a visual way as much as possible. It's almost like I want people to look at that giant number that's in the middle of the circle and like start asking questions.
And
especially if they grab that slider that's flashing at you now at the bottom, the little round handle, you just slide that and it works great on mobile. It's like just right in your hand. You can just whiz right through the whole time chain, but you instantly start seeing some interactive, like explanation of what is the Bitcoin time chain? What is a block number? And like, if you just play with that thing for a minute, you might actually understand more about Bitcoin than like 99% of people. Cause like you see halvings and you see the cycle now connected to those little notches on the supply circle, like the halving circle and the little notches on the supply circle sync up. So when you interact with that UI, you can like visually see it. And I feel like there's some potential there to just get some really solid signal and education to people without like even, you know, needing to like put a bunch of Bitcoin logos or BTC on it.
That's really exactly what my point is. So what I was getting at was something that we've talked about on the show, and me and Mike have talked about a lot personally, which is, or in privately, which is that the idea, and we like, what is a Bitcoin movie? What is a Bitcoin meme? What is a Bitcoin this? And it's an important question, because I think that you can have a, you know, a Bitcoin movie or a Bitcoin meme that doesn't ever even actually say the word Bitcoin or doesn't prominently display the logo. And I think that's important, because as generations, as time goes on, like idols, you know, we were talking about it because Mike was showing me a picture of like these shirts for toddlers at Target, and it had like Bob Marley and Biggie Smalls. And like just thinking about when those artists were at their prime in their lives, right? Like nobody, they were a little bit controversial. They were not mainstream, and you wouldn't see children's clothing with wrappers on it at the store at Target, you know, in the 1990s. But now you do, because those they became memes. They kind of became so ubiquitous in culture that it's easy to forget who they were or what their message was or what their message was against or what they were disrupting or who they were threatening. It just becomes a meme, and it loses all of its meaning. So if your concept, if your ideas don't evolve over time to have new, fresh marketing that can kind of like adapt, your idea or your technology or whatever can die off. It can fall out of the culture. So to have these, to have something like this that is very, you can quickly intuit that it's about what, that it's Bitcoin, that this is the inner workings, the data, like it's the time chain data, the time chain calendar.
It's a protocol, baby.
It's a protocol. And then because it doesn't have all these memes that your mind just quickly, it's like, oh, that's Bitcoin. It's just, you know, the expensive thing I see on TV. You're like, oh, I forgot, like, all of this is what Bitcoin is. It's not just a meme. It's this really complex protocol that's collecting all this data that's kind of telling us like this insane amount of competition and cooperation of the network to try to game or to try to benefit off of this randomness.
It's collecting layers of time, as you say.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of just speaks for itself, because it's real and it's powerful in its ability to convey ideas. And that's what, you know, I think anything designed is attempting to do. You know, I've got like some artists that have trusted me enough to like host their art in a very unusual little gallery on this app. And if you click the gallery button, you'll be able to scroll through and see there's about 300 different pieces that are placed on different blocks, and you can jump right to them, and then you can link from those things to the artists themselves. And so I've kind of like done some real integration of artwork. And I'm starting to really work on that. It's kind of just like version one of this gallery. I think it's going to evolve quite a bit going forward. But it's like,
wow,
those little icons that you click on, they're on specific blocks that like people in the real world created like real artworks at those moments in the chain. And you put those things there and you can start to appreciate the time that's passed since there, where it is in the sequence of things. You know, the consequences of how this system works are really profound. You just have to see them. So I'm just trying to visualize, you know, a handful of things that I'm hoping are, you know, helpful to other people. To me, this is the way I think about it. Like I'm reaching into my own brain and trying to like make sense of the way that I look at this thing. And that's what you get at Time Chain Calendar. It's just like a kind of me sharing what I see.
Yeah, one of the things that I think people really are missing out on a lot if they only value or they only look at the dollar or whatever, the fiat exchange price of Bitcoin, because if some people say, oh, like, you know, it's just this Ponzi scheme that they're trying to drive the number up. It's not really worth anything. Like, there's no way to value it. There's no cash flows. It's not a business, etc. But then you come to like the time chain calendar, you come to the home page here, or the home app, and there's this, all this data, and it's, you can infer, the more you study it, you can infer a whole lot of information by this panel of all this dynamic data. And it's like, well, how is Bitcoin valued? And it's like, well, let me pull up the time chain calendar app real quick, and let's start going through the fee rates, the, you know, what's going on in the mempool, what's going on with the memory size, the amount of public nodes, the average block time, the hash rate, this change in the rate of hash rate, you know, the blocks over the last so many hours, what's the next difficulty adjustment, how many addresses are there, how many UTXOs are there, how many transactions are there, what's the total disk space, what's the market cap, what's the volume. There's so much to it. I mean, this isn't even all of it. This is just what you can capture from inferring the activity on the time chain.
Yeah, man. Wow. I was starting to get overwhelmed hearing you describe all those things. There's a lot on there. Crap. Like, I worry about this all the time. Like, it's too much stuff. But one of the challenges is how to present these things so that they're not overwhelming, and all that stuff that you read off is organized into little sections. It's kind of a new aspect of this rearranging the furniture that I did on the app, is moving data points around, and now they're grouped together in very purposeful groups. So that group that's called block production, that's all data about the pace of block production. You see the average block time. That's this difficulty period that will directly relate to the next difficulty change. Because again, we're faster than 10 minutes, the difficulty has to go up. So that's going to be right next to your hash rate. And your hash rate is right above the difficulty. And basically the kind of like getting some of these things closer together. I don't know. I'm working on it. It's going to keep evolving, man. I'm trying to help people associate the different data points as well, because I find it's all about how it's presented that it impacts if it's even like absorbed in your head properly.
One thing I think you've got going for you is that if you know anybody who gets going down the rabbit hole who's into Bitcoin, is that you can't get enough information, right? Like, you're desperately searching, you run out of podcasts to listen to, you run out of articles and tweets and stories, yada yada, spaces, you're finding any possible way that you can to learn new interesting information about Bitcoin. So you show up to your time chain and you're worried about it being overwhelming, and I think it's more like people are showing up, it's like being a kid in a candy store. It's like, I can keep diving deeper down this rabbit hole and figuring out, like, what does this information really mean? Like, what are the implications of this data point or this change in the hash rate or the difficulty, whatever? And I think it just keeps sending you down another deeper, you know, side rabbit hole. It's like unpeeling the onion. There's just more layers and layers of information, and you just keep absorbing it. I mean, when you first get into Bitcoin, right, like this, and you realize how much you don't know, it is overwhelming. And then you keep going, you keep going, and you keep going, and you never get sick of it. And then you're a couple of years into it, and you're like, Jesus Christ, there's still more that I don't know than I've ever learned. And so, but you keep going. And this is just another like step. Like
it's not just that you keep going, it's that you're also like kind of getting more like definition and more clarity in what you see and how you understand it. There's layers to each concept even, and there's almost like on one end of the spectrum just a meme about the concept to initially wrap your head around and chew on, and then over time you find out, well, that's not exactly it, or there's caveats, and then eventually you're like, okay, I can discard the meme entirely now because I really understand it over here on the other end of the spectrum. And so to me, that's what's neat about kind of presenting certain aspects of Bitcoin in this calendar that keeps changing and reflecting where we are, so that if you look at it with some frequency, what even if it's once a week or once a month, like, but just you kind of come back to it again and again, you're going to kind of like start seeing connections between things that just aren't really apparent at first. And yeah, that's a wonderful thing.
I'm curious if you've found any opportunities or any ways that you can collaborate or integrate with Nostr with Time Chain Calendar, or if there's anything with Nostr that you've been excited about lately, because I know that's something we've talked about in the past, that you've been pretty into that. And I was always open to Nostr, but like I didn't really understand the potential or really see the potential. But recently it's been like epiphany after an epiphany, and I'm just wondering if you felt that way too, or if there's any way that these two things could integrate somehow, because I think everything can in a way.
Yeah, man. Well, at the moment, it's not integrated, and I don't see the clearest path to that, just because that's not the priority right now. I do use Nostr to just kind of keep posting updates and social media use of Nostr. And I'm a huge fan of everything that's going on there. There's so many really very innovative things happening. I don't know how else to describe it. I think it's exciting because people are realizing another sort of, you know, distributed network and all the sort of social network effects that happen with these things. And it's still growing and it's totally evolving, and the applications have just gotten better and better. So yeah, I think it's exciting times. I think Nostr has a place long term amidst the sort of Bitcoin tech stack, because I actually have heard several different people bring up Nostr as a potential like auxiliary network that could be used in some way in conjunction with Bitcoin. We've already seen the sort of way that Zap messages tied to Lightning transactions have really transformed some of the experiences that are possible on Nostr. It's really a very powerful thing, and I think it's in its infancy. It's growing so fast. It's hard to imagine what it's going to be like in any long period of time.
Yeah, I saw a really cool thread about, you know, Bitcoin wallets. Essentially, you can associate them with your NPub, and then you can basically keep a list of all of your social graph, your contacts, and what their addresses are. So if like you want to pay somebody, whether it's somebody in your like immediate circle, like your friends group, or somebody online, it's like, instead of having to like go to like one of their social media pages or like try to find, you know, contact them, hey, can you send me a Lightning address? It's like you just open up your wallet and you just boop, you just search for, you know, Wicked Fucking Clown or whatever his name is, like, and just send them money.
Yeah, man, it's great. It's great for people to be able to value for value so sort of like uninhibited. And it's starting to feel more important, really, as just, you know, the short year and a half or so that I've been paying attention to it, maybe really just a year. It's grown tremendously and evolved tremendously. And I can't even imagine where it's going. It's gonna be important as far as a censorship resistant tool. I think that's clearly something that's gonna be more important over time.
Are you still is Time Chain Calendar still pretty much a solo project for you, or do you have anybody that you've been starting to work with or helping you scale this even more?
No, it's a solo project at this. I mean, it's been a year and a half. It's just me. I designed it and built it, and I'm the person who's constantly updating it and trying to fix bugs and trying to improve it. So yeah, it's just me. I do have pretty ambitious plans going forward to build some more new stuff, like new platforms. This app is currently a web app. It lives at timekingcalendar.com, but it's, you know, the web is wonderful for being open to everyone, and that's a really important thing for me. But probably my next project I work on is going to be more on native apps, and that's going to be, you know, kind of a whole different angle. And I'm a solo team, but you know, I'll expand one day if I am ever in need of doing that and I'm able to. Till then, it's just me powering forward.
You talked about some working on new things, including like native app work, but I'm sure you've got some other features that you'd like to implement. Do you have any that that you're ready to talk about or start sharing, like what you're looking towards doing?
No, I can't divulge the secrets. I gotta build these things, and then when they're ready to be even tested by anyone out there, I'd love to come and talk to you guys again and show you, but I can't sneak that.
That's fair.
You know, but there's tons of stuff on Time Chain Calendar that, like, people, you know, don't really know about, and I don't know. I feel like I should try to point some of these things out, and then maybe people will make use of them. I'm trying to bring back some things that I kind of prototyped out but weren't quite working perfectly. I want to bring back the block alarm. That was really fun, although it did not work very reliably. And try this. If you've still got the thing up, try this. Hover over one of the little blocks in the 24-hour blocks, and you'll notice that the big number in the middle changes to what number block that one that you're hovering over is. And so, and if you click the little square, unfortunately, this doesn't work so well on mobile because everything is so tiny, but on a desktop, you can click the little squares and you jump the whole interface right to that block. So what this means is you can kind of identify maybe some anomalies in the pattern of blocks in that 24 hours. If you see any big gaps, this is how I've used it, is I just hover over one block on one side of the gap and the other block on the other side of the gap, and I can quickly see how much time that was between them, because it'll show you the time of each one, and you can kind of like click on the one and then use the arrow keys to kind of go to the next one. There's basically a sort of like block exploration user experience that's possible here, and like I don't know that anybody ever like looks into that, but this update really kind of improved on some of the presentation of that whole interaction.
So I have one question that I wanted to get to tonight, among other things. I mean, this has like been really eye-opening, just all the things that we're sort of touching upon, but I was curious about your name on Twitter, and I wanted to know where it's Meditation Man, and I'm wondering where that came from.
It's from another life ago, but you know, when I actually started on Bitcoin Twitter, I was coming from a very kind of philosophical angle, and I used to like say to myself that I'm like meditating on these things, and so that kind of like turned into Time Chain Meditation. That was my name at one point, and then that evolved into just Time Chain TC. That's where that came from. And then when I created Time Chain Calendar, the TC really is cemented in there now, because it's the initials of that name. So I don't know. It's a relic. That's all I can say.
I see. No, I was just curious if you like meditated and if you had a process behind that.
Yeah, I mean, I used to do more of that, but not as much these days. Now I kind of focus on fitness and health and eating well and trying to just, you know,
extend
life.
Your meditation sort of flows into this, the making of this time chain calendar, you know, it's like a meditation in a way.
Yeah, it is. I mean, to really, you know, get things sorted out, it takes focus, it takes some work. I don't know. I mean, it's life is a constant, like, chaotic experience, and if you can get a little peace, that's a good thing, right?
For sure.
Of course.
So are you now do you do host spaces full time? It seems like you've got a pretty big, you know, popular morning spaces now. Is like, how's that going?
That just kind of manifested. A lot of people literally were in a space talking about, let's do a good morning space. And we started it, and it's been basically Monday through Friday every day since the beginning of the year. And it's just a bunch of plebs talking about whatever's happened in the last day. It's kind of your a morning kind of space vibes, as far as like, let's see what happened yesterday and what's going on. And, you know, always an interesting conversation ensues. I don't know. I'm kind of just part of a group of people that rotate through hosting those. I think I host maybe one a week. But it's just a couple hours in the morning drinking coffee and like catching up with plebs.
That's cool. I mean, it's something I've noticed, like people that used to listen to like the FM morning shows, or like they're like the Good Morning America on TV when they're getting ready for work, or they're at work, or some people watch CNBC and like Squawk Box, and more people are kind of coming to this, especially I think probably people who work from home, into these like morning spaces, like these get together, you talk about Bitcoin, and it kind of replaces, because some, I mean, you got hosts and you obviously host one a week, but there's a lot of people that just show up every day just to listen, and in minor interactions, it's just a cool evolution of the morning routine that people have, broadcasting ideas back and forth, you know, over different mediums.
You also have so much control of, you know, getting your own voice out there as opposed to a morning show, you know, routine.
Or getting your own voice out there and finding voices or ideas very relatable or similar to your values.
Bro, it's deterministic. It's some days it's like pure signal, other days it's chaos and degeneracy. There's all sorts of people that roll through. Some days we're talking about like things happening in the TradFi world, in the Wall Street world, in the macro level things, and of course politics, and you know what's happening in the world, and all these things can't help but slip in. But you know, we also try to, you know, keep it together for 2 hours. Sometimes we succeed at that and sometimes we don't, and it kind of meanders where it goes, and there's good days and bad days. It's like everything else, but it's just kind of you know, how cool is it that we have like a bit of just open free space to say what we think and talk about what we want to talk about? And it's, you know, it might be transcribed and like analyzed by AI, but it's fucking uncensored, right? At the time
right.
It's happening,
right?
Are you guys getting far more into the political sphere these days, especially because of the,
or is it harder to keep it out?
I mean, that ebbs and flows. That handles itself. Like, there's days recently, I bet you guys could guess, when there's political events that are just on people's minds, and it, it's kind of impossible not to talk about it. But you know,
I was going to say, yeah. like you mentioned on this episode and previous episodes about the importance, whether it was super deliberate or not, but the 4-year epochs, and it's like, you know, it's easy to forget where your head was 4 years ago. And, you know, nobody knows that better than Joe Biden. I don't think he knows anything about where he was 4 years ago.
Yeah, man. For sure.
But go ahead, Mike.
Sorry. I just want to say, you know, it'd be interesting. It'd be so interesting to be able to like plug somehow into your app and like write a journal. And then I knew, like, I could like
timestamp it.
Yeah, timestamp my journal. I don't know. That's like a thing that,
you know, that
occurred to me.
I told TC this, I think, in DMs a while back, but based on two data points, I could probably get really close to what the Bitcoin price was, or what the date, like the calendar date was, yeah. If you gave me just the Bitcoin price and the block number. And the more you do that, like the more accurate you get at mm-hmm. it. But it's just like you could start to throw out, you know, like block numbers and then date and then prices. You'd be like, oh, that was, you know, 2017 or that was 2013, especially like during bull markets.
The subsidy
and
as well, of course. The subsidy, you know what sort of 4-year cycle, or part of the 4-year cycle you're in.
There's just a lot, it's almost like a shortcut of memories. Like,
interesting.
What's the block size? What's the Bitcoin price? Oh, what was going on that day? I can go back.
Yeah,
go right back.
I got those things on the screen, except for what happened that day, unless it was a.
It's different,
you know,
for everybody,
special
too.
A Bitcoin day, right? Like we have some important Bitcoin days marked in the calendar, and the calendar does actually give you a calendar alert on those days and tells you today is, you know, white paper day, and today is Genesis day, and today is running Bitcoin day. And so you've already got some of those important things there. This is definitely some room for me to, you know, evolve into down the road, is, you know, potentially having more things on the blocks, just like that gallery that I was talking about before. Right. And it could be more interactive with users supplying some content that's there or something like that. It's just, there's tons of possibilities. Really, to this point, I've been focused on trying to finalize that main Circle interface and like get the app cleaner and organized better to just provide more signal and perform better. And hopefully I never have the site crashing again like the last having. You know, so that's what it's all about.
Amazing. TC, thank you for coming on tonight. This is, unless Dan, do you have any closing thoughts?
No, I just wanted to give TC the opportunity to tell people where he can send them, shill anything he's got while he's here.
Yeah, timechaincalendar.com, that's where it is. If you want to find updates, you can go to the Twitter app, the timechaincal, C-A-L, timechaincal, is the handle of the official Timechain Calendar Twitter account. I put all my updates there about what's happening. You can also find me on Nostr if you search me by TC at timechaincalendar.com. That's the NIP05, which is a way that you can easily find people's NPUBs on Nostr. Look it up by TC at timechaincalendar.com. And that's how you find me. And, follow the Twitter account and check the updates, but really just keep an eye on Timechain Calendar. And keep an eye on Bitcoin, because that's good for you. Good for your mind. And so just keep looking at it. I'm trying to show it to you.
Yeah, you don't even have the name Bitcoin inside of the website itself or any of the apps, you know? go back to your point, Dan.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Well, cool, man. I'm excited to hear what new changes are coming down the road and to have you on again to learn more about how you've improved the way people view Bitcoin in time.
Word, I will definitely come back and show you guys when I got that going. Do you guys want a beta test for me? Do you want to
100%
try the thing out when it's like proof of concept and like help me test it and find bugs?
Yeah, why not?
I will join the time chain calendar beta testing team.
Love it.
Cool, I cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!